Welcome to an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma give their opinions on the latest happenings surrounding Yankees baseball, as well as dive into the hottest topics in the sports world. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran, Joe Auriemma, and our special guest in the first segment today will be Al Iannazzone. He is the beat writer for the New York Knicks Newsday, correct, Al?
That's right.
So glad I got that right. Al, not too much going on in Knicks camp. Nothing happening at the trade deadline. Mike D'Antoni still... No, he isn't. Mike D'Antoni up and resigned. To me, I mean, it came out of nowhere. Like, it didn't surprise me, but it came out of nowhere because I really didn't think he would give up like that mid-season. But covering the team all this year, did you kind of sense this coming?
I wish I could say I did. And there were times I said to myself, you know, is he going to last the season? And I said that a number of ways. Was he either going to be fired or was he going to just have enough? Because, I mean, there's a lot of drama in New York, as you guys know. And it's all around the Knicks right now. It's all around him. He ran shoot around that morning, and he looked a little different to me. Of course, now that being, you know, hindsight is always 20/20.
Right.
But after I left and after everything came out, I said, you know what? Yeah, I saw that he did a weird circle around the gym. He circled back to talk to a couple of guys. Maybe you could have started putting some pieces together, but, you know, it was a stunner for everyone. I mean, I think everybody wanted to see what happened next, especially after what Carmelo Anthony said in the Bulls locker room the other night, and he was kind of distant from the players, distant from his teammates, distant from his coaches. But I did not expect that day.
Look, I'm not saying that Carmelo Anthony isn't a tremendous basketball player. We all know he is. He's a closer. He's a finisher. You want the ball in his hands when the clock is winding down. You want him to take the last shot. But you have two Knicks teams this year, one without Carmelo Anthony, which won 8 of 10 games, saw a lot of passing, saw Mike D'Antoni's system working, and then you had Carmelo Anthony back in the fold for 11 games, and they went 2-9. So I really – and the Knicks during that 8 out of 10 stretch, they were fun to watch again, Al. The ball movement, the open shots, everybody getting involved. Instead of the drab pass it in – and four guys go to one side of the floor, and one guy backs down, you know, basically the entire defense, and, you know, being Carmelo Anthony. I get it that, you know, that's the NBA, half court, you have a superstar, that's what happens. But it was really a tale of two different Knicks teams. So you have to at least admit the system does work, because it did when Carmelo Anthony was injured.
It does work. I mean, it's been proven. If you have the right point guard, it works. You know, I've said it before, Raymond Felton ran it pretty well last year before the trade. There's a guy named Steve Nash who ran it pretty well. Chris Duhon ran it pretty well. It didn't work as well with Stephon Marbury, and it wasn't working earlier this year with Iman Shumpert and Tony Douglas. I think both those guys, especially Shumpert, was a little more out of position. But, yeah, I thought it was going to work. I thought Carmelo would have sat there and watched what the team had done and come back and try to fit in, and he said he did, and I thought there were times he did. I mean, his shots were down. He wasn't forcing things early on, but then they started losing, and I said, okay, this is going to change, and things are going to change, and we know where all the blame is going to go here, and you just saw it. You just saw it, that everything was turning towards, you know, Carmelo. Players were getting angry. He was getting all the blame. I think he could have handled it differently. I think Mike D'Antoni could have handled it differently. I mean, anytime there's a split, you know, both sides are wrong. I still think they should have done what you said, run the ball through Carmelo. You got to do that. You know, you got to post him up. He'll get to the foul line. He'll make plays. But you got to do that within the framework of the pick-and-roll offense, too. You got to have a healthy dose of both.
Right.
But, again, it just wasn't working for whatever reason. And I think everything started getting into – guys worrying about who's getting shots, who's not getting shots. Can I play with this guy on the floor? Because remember, the one thing we haven't mentioned is amid all this, they also added J.R. Smith and they added Baron Davis. And these are two guys who need the ball too, who take some pretty crazy shots. And you know, there was just a lot going on at the same time. That's why I don't think it's all Carmelo Anthony's fault. But, you know, when you're the superstar and you're the face of the franchise and when you throw the numbers out that you threw out there, it's kind of hard not for most of the blame to go his way.
Yeah, and in a shortened season, it doesn't get any easier with all those new players and D'Antoni and Melo trying to mesh in the system and everything else. But follow you on Twitter, and I see everything you throw out there. And one of the things was that there was a definite division in the locker room. Has that division become – are people coming back together again now that D'Antoni is out of the picture?
Well, we'll see. You know, I mean, obviously the other night they looked pretty good against the Blazers, who were a team that was obviously in a mess.
And they have a decent stretch of games coming up here, Al. I mean, it's not like they're playing the upper echelon of the league, you know, the rest of the month. They have a couple of, you know, so-so games, but they should do well here with Mike Woodson running the show.
Yeah, well, they've lost a lot of games against teams you would think they would win, so you can't say that yet. You really can't. As far as the division, I think we have to wait and see. I think the division was what Amar'e Stoudemire said after the game the other night, that he believes Mike D'Antoni left because he was frustrated that some guys weren't buying into his system. Now, of course, Amar'e is not going to place any names to it, but I think we all can figure out who we're talking about here. Now, Carmelo yesterday, he's played defense lately more than he ever has in his life. He's defending himself left and right, saying he sacrificed for Mike. He supports Mike, he did everything he could. Again, I don't know if that's entirely true. I think both of them probably were a little stubborn. But, you know, we'll see what happens now, because now there's a new coach here, Mike Woodson, who, you know, he likes to run the type of offense that Carmelo Anthony is more comfortable with, post-ups, isolations. But they're still going to run some pick and roll. They have to, because they're like you said, shortened season. There aren't going to be that many practices. You can't revamp the whole offense. You still want to keep Jeremy Lin effective and Amar'e Stoudemire. Amar'e Stoudemire is most effective in the pick and roll. He doesn't really have a post game. So, again, we'll see how things change as we go forward.
From the team you cover now to the team you used to cover in the New Jersey Nets, how many trade deadlines are going to go by where this continues to happen to the Nets? Now, I know they got Darren Williams last year, which was a, you know, pulling a rabbit out of a hat. But, you know, Dwight Howard started all these rumors at the beginning of the season before, you know, a tip-off even happened about he wanted to come to the Nets, he wanted to go to Brooklyn. And then the night before the trading deadline, he flip-flopped more than John Kerry before the election that year. I forget what year it was. I don't know. I'm not really into politics, and I don't really care. But it's the thing that first popped into my head. What do you make? I mean, and I got to give you credit. You told us at the beginning of the season he was going to be a Net, and he was almost a Net. What do you think happened in that situation, Al, where, you know, at the 11th hour, someone came to him and said, you know, Orlando's going to hate you. You have to stay here. What is it that went through Dwight Howard's head that he said, you know what, I'm going to waive everything. I'm going to stay here. I'm not going to the Nets.
I wish I could tell you, because I think that was a surprise. I mean, I think everyone expected Dwight Howard to be traded. I know people were saying, you know, they're going to hold on to him for the rest of the year. Orlando could not have done that. They cannot hold on to him for the rest of the year if they didn't have assurances that he would stay with them, because you can't just let a guy like that walk without getting anything in return. And I think they were close to making a move with the Nets, you know, right before the deadline. But then, like you said, he flip-flopped. And that obviously puts the Nets in a very precarious position now, because what happens with Darren Williams? You know, he's not opting in. He's not going to sign the ETO that that Dwight Howard signed. He's going to test free agency.
Are you shocked that the Nets didn't move Darren Williams before the trade deadline, knowing that he's going to opt into free agency?
I was a little surprised at first. You know, I kept saying they're going to have to do something. You're going to find Darren's name involved. I mean, I said that a long time ago, that if they don't think they're getting Dwight Howard, the Nets have to be proactive in moving Darren. But I think, you know, knowing the Nets, I think they probably still think they have a chance to get Dwight Howard in some way, shape, or form. Because, look, the Nets really didn't give up that much in terms of They still have Brook Lopez. They still have Marshawn Brooks. They still have some of their assets that could be used this summer to make a trade. Can they trade for Dwight Howard this summer? Maybe. You know, if he goes and this time requests a trade and means it. The Nets have to do something between now and July 1st, and obviously you can't do anything right now. But they have to do something in order to keep Darren Williams. If they would have traded Darren Williams yesterday, that probably would have, you know, crushed the franchise. There still is a little hope between now and July 1st that the Nets can make some moves because they're going to have to. They have to improve the roster to get Darren Williams to sign his name on a contract. But, you know, if I'm a Nets fan, absolutely. After what happened yesterday, I'm starting to wonder if Darren Williams is playing his last 20 games as a Net right now.
Hey, Al, how are you? It's Joe Auriemma.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah, and just continuing with the Dwight Howard saga, you know, I know Chris touched on it that, yeah, he just kind of flip-flopped, and he signs this waiver, and really, though, he really kind of ruined his leverage for, you know, the future. And also, isn't this something that they're going to have to deal with either in the offseason or at the deadline again next year? So what went through his mind? What was his motivation?
Yeah, Joe, I wish I could tell you. I thought the same thing. Like, if he really wanted to prove that he was committed, then, you know, he's got to sign an extension.
Right.
Not just a one-year, you know, ETO, because you're right. If they don't trade him by the summer and he doesn't commit to anything else, then by the trade deadline again, he's going to be the number one guy expected to be on the block. So this was very bizarre the way everything turned out. and I don't have an answer as to why Dwight did this. I just know that, you know, like I said, I think the Nets were kind of gearing up for the big Brooklyn push, opening the building with Dwight and Darren. I don't think they've completely given up on that yet, because if they did, they would have traded Darren. But again, if you're a Net fan or you work in the Net organization today, you're kind of thinking, okay, you know, what might have been 75-25 happening a couple days ago, 80-20, 90-10, whatever you want to say, is probably 50-50, maybe even less right now because of what Dwight did. But again, things could change. He could just hold them hostage. If Orlando doesn't make the moves, they, you know, then maybe Dwight says, that's it, I'm not playing this year, or however it may work out. I don't know, but, you know, obviously the Nets and the Magic are two teams you got to keep an eye on from June on, because there's going to be a lot of activity, I believe.
You know, I know you and Chris talked about Carmelo Anthony, but really when the Knicks were going through what they were going through, Al, you know, Linsanity was at its height. Everybody was in love with this kid. It seems like he's come back down to earth a little bit. And also the fact that, you know, maybe the offense isn't what it was when Carmelo Anthony wasn't in the offense. However, you tweeted just recently, just as early as an hour ago, that Mike Woodson and Lynn spoke this morning, and Woodson said that Lynn is absolutely going to remain the starter. But even with that being said, is Linsanity kind of over here? Is his role going to be really diminished?
Well, I think it's going to be less. And, you know, I know people don't like this part of the story because everybody wants the story to continue. I think Linsanity ended probably, if not the Nets game when Darren scored 37 against him.
Right.
Two games later in Miami when he went 1-for-11. And I'm not knocking Jeremy Lin. I mean, what he's done, he's a terrific story. He's still putting up decent numbers. You know, but again, the fact that he was doing what he was doing in New York, an undrafted point guard from Harvard, it became the biggest story in the world. If he was doing this in Memphis or Indiana, it would have been a nice story.
Right.
But it became, this is the next Steve Nash, you know, this is the next superstar point guard, and it's very hard to live up to those expectations. And I've said all along that what he did was phenomenal, but it also was a product of Mike D'Antoni's system.
Right.
We know he can run the pick and roll. He's very smart. He knows how to run that offense. Now we're going to find out how he fits in Mike Woodson's offense, where there's still going to be some pick and rolls, but there's going to be post-ups, there's going to be ISOs. He's going to have to wait for the ball in the corner, you know, for an open shot. So, you know, again, it's an evolving thing. I think, like anybody else, it blew up too soon And it was going to be very difficult for this guy to keep up with that pace. I mean, he's not an all-star player, not yet. It was a fantastic 10-game stretch.
Right.
But we'll see what happens with him and how he fits. But I do think they're going to give him a chance, obviously, to play under Mike Woodson and to keep the starting job. Now, if he struggles, well, then you have to look in a different direction, because obviously winning and making the playoffs is the most important thing for the Knicks right now. They have 22 or 23 games, and they got to get it right. It's just you don't want to change up the lineup too much. I mean, they've already been through, you know, like Chris said, they've had two seasons in one, and a lot of ways, three seasons in one.
Yeah, they have. You know, one thing that you're hearing from a lot of Knicks fans on Twitter, or, you know, even Mike Francesa on the radio, is that, you know, Carmelo has kind of gotten his way here, where, you know, he's the superstar player. You know, we don't know the facts that if D'Antoni was driven out of town by Carmelo, but now that, you know, all of the pieces are in place for Carmelo, it's kind of put up or shut up time for him. So do you agree with that sentiment that, you know, playing in New York, seeing the scrutiny that you go through on a daily basis and what the fan base is already saying with 22 games left, do you think it's put up or shut up time for Carmelo?
Oh, I absolutely think it is. I mean, this is a critical stretch for him, and it would be like that for any player in his position. You know, first of all, he forced the trade here. I mean, that's the first thing. He forced the trade
here. Yes, he did.
And the team hasn't necessarily been the same since he got here. So he's got to make it work. And everything that's happened this year and the numbers without him, the numbers with him, you know, he can resurrect himself. He can resurrect his reputation. He can do all those things if the Knicks win and they go far in the playoffs.
Right.
If they don't, will they look to trade him this summer? I don't know. I mean, I think it depends on who your coach is and how he wants to run things. You know, we don't know if Woodson's going to be back. You know, they're going to look into Phil Jackson. You know, they're going to look into a lot of guys. So I don't think Carmelo Anthony's Knick career is only going to be the next 23 games.
Right.
But, you know, he is not proven yet that he is LeBron James or Dwayne Wade. You know, he was in that draft class, and he's probably the best scorer from that draft class, but he's got to win a little more. And this is the time for him. He's in New York. He's home. A lot of things have happened. A lot of things have been said about him. He's had to defend himself a lot. You know, 23 games plus, he's got a lot of work to do, in my opinion.
Al, as always, great stuff from you. Al Iannazone covers the Knicks for New York Newsday. You can check him out on Twitter. It's @Al_Iannazone. That's 2N2Zs. Al, as always, we miss you, you know, covering the Nets here. It's definitely not the same, but you're doing a heck of a job over at Newsday.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you soon, and keep it right here for more from the Off the Wall podcast.
Want to see what everyone is talking about? Check out the 2-time Emmy Award-winning original video content at yesnetwork.com. It's the best in Yankees web shows, podcasts, and features only at yesnetwork.com. Welcome back to Off the Wall. Once again, here are Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma.
Welcome back to the Off the Wall podcast on yesnetwork.com. We'd like to thank once again Al Iannazone of Newsday for hopping aboard, talk a little Knicks and Nets, getting us up to speed on all the ins and outs of what's been going on in the Garden and what didn't happen at The Rock and eventually Brooklyn. Listen. There's a billboard up commemorating Dwight Howard's loyalty to Orlando, okay? Well, as far as Dwight Howard goes in the tri-state area, you are a pariah. You're a pariah. You started this nonsense. It was you. It wasn't your agent. It wasn't the Magic. It wasn't the Nets. It wasn't Darren Williams. It was you, Superman. Let's use that nickname a little lightly. Superman does not crap on Metropolis.
How about Superman also can hit free throws?
That too. You know, Superman could see through things. You looked at the Nets, you looked right through them. What you did, not only to the Nets, not only to the state of New Jersey and the Nets fans who've been diehards, You have to be diehard to be a Net fan. Okay? What you did to the Net fan and what you did to the base that's gonna be around this team when they move to Brooklyn is reprehensible.
He owes an apology to Billy King. He owes an apology to Darren Williams. He owes an apology to the New Jersey, New York fan base.
You could talk all you want about being loyal. And I use loyal in quotations. Because if you were loyal at the outset of the season, you would have been out there, I want to be traded, I want to be traded. That's loyalty? That's a load of crap. And you know it. If you wanted to stay in Orlando, we would have known you wanted to stay in Orlando in December! December. And now that you're out here saying, oh, well, I always wanted to stay, and they brought me my favorite food and my favorite candies. Wow, 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 cry me a river. Saw it on Twitter. Patrick Ewing said he wouldn't survive in New York. Wouldn't survive. He hasn't eaten or slept. The reason free agency is there, Joe, is so you get opportunities like this.
Absolutely.
This is how it works.
Absolutely.
Kurt Flood did it for everybody.
You know, it's funny. He said he didn't want to be LeBron James, and he didn't want the decision, that whole process to come down to him. But you know what? He made it about him. These 3 months, these 4 months, he was worse than LeBron James, if you ask me. Because at least LeBron, at the end of the day, as pompous as he was, made a decision. This guy didn't want to piss off anybody. And that's what it comes down to. He didn't want to piss off anybody. And you know what? What he wound up doing was he pissed off everybody. And now, over the summer and going into next year, guess what? You're going to be in the same position.
All over again.
If you were really committed to Orlando, then you would have said, forget waiving the opt-out. Let's sign an extension today.
Mm-hmm.
Let's sign an extension because I am that committed to Orlando.
Thank you.
But no, you waived your opt-out just so you could do this BS charade again during the summer and next year.
Yeah. Because
so you've made, instead of being Carmelo Anthony, you've made it, who did it for, you know, weeks, months that he wanted to be a Knick, you're now going to do it for 2 years.
Yeah. And by that time, you know, the Nets might be done with him.
They might be.
Darren Williams might be gone. Darren Williams, I saw it on Twitter today. It's not going to be monkey see, monkey do. I'm not signing anything. I am testing the waters.
Of course.
And you know what? Darren might come back. He may, because he could get the most money out of the Nets. But he also said something that really, and I can't tell these guys anything. I mean, I can't read their minds. I thought, you know, when Al said it in the beginning of the season, I thought he was crazy that Dwight was going to be a Net. But he wasn't. Al was right on. It was an 11th hour decision that kept him in Orlando. And it wasn't his own. He was letting other people make decisions for him, and he's going to regret it. He is.
And Darren is going to be the genius. He's going to opt out, and he's going to test the waters.
Darren said, the next place I go is the place I want to retire. That, to me, says Darren's going to Dallas. It's his hometown. They're clearing all this cap space. I don't think the money matters to him. I think he wants to go to a place where, A, he's comfortable, B, he could win, and see its win right away.
And guess what? He can get another contract after this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he can make his money in endorsements if he wins a championship with Dirk.
It doesn't matter. If you win a championship in Dallas, you could still get the same amount. The endorsement should... You know, Michael Jordan's rolling over in his grave. He isn't even dead yet. He played in Chicago. Was in New York. Still a big market. Had plenty of endorsement deals because he was his heiress.
Yeah.
But what mattered the most to Jordan?
Championships.
Thank you. Winning basketball games.
These guys are so
it's different
self-centered.
Joe, it's so different now.
It's pathetic. It really is. And I understand, well, we have to take care of, you know, I have to take care of my family. Listen, don't look at me and say you have to take care of your family when there's people, and I know people very close to me, that make $30,000 a year. Okay, don't tell me you have to take care of your family. If you knew how to spend your money and take care of your money, you wouldn't need all this.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't. You really need a house with 30 bedrooms? Do you really need that? What the hell do you need a house with 30 bedrooms and 17 bathrooms for? Other than the fact that it's a status symbol. Anyway, moving on. We could talk about this for hours, but we have to move on because...
There's so much going on in Yankee land.
Now Andy Pettit is back.
Via the way of Mario Lemieux and Brett Favre. And
here we go again.
So Andy Pettit is back.
I'm not going to say I don't like it, okay? I've been walking around the halls here being Mr. Negative Nelly, which is my job. It's what I do the best.
Yes.
Especially with the Giants. I like it. I do.
Can never have enough pitching.
You can never have... Exactly. That's the exact reason. If somebody gets hurt and you have Andy Pettit coming back and, you know, getting strong in the minors, bang, you have a starter.
Of course.
And you have somebody you could trust. Kevin Kennedy just said it on Sirius MLB radio. Trust is huge with managers.
Absolutely.
Phil Hughes is still a guy you can't really trust. None of these kids that will come up are guys that you're going to be able to trust.
Yeah.
A David Phelps, an Adam Warren, a DJ Mitchell. Now look, we interview these kids. We do Minor League Monthly, self-promoting JA that I am. Okay? And we just talked to these guys down in Tampa. And I just said to them, you know, with A.J. Burnett now...
I was just thinking about that.
Do you think that this kind of opens... And you saw the look in their eye like, yeah, I really think, you know, this sends a message to us that we have to, you know, still take care of our business. But when the bell rings, we're going to get the call. And now they're not. And that's the thing. Look... You don't know what you're going to get out of Pettit.
No, I know.
He's been out of the game for an entire year. Everybody just sees Andy Pettit and, you know, they go nuts. Fine, I get it. The guy won the clinching games in 2009. Every single one in the playoffs. And I get it. He's a guy you could trust out on the mound. But he's going to have to build that trust back up because you haven't seen him pitch in a year. The only time this guy's been pitching is BP to his kids. And BP to the Yankees as a quote-unquote special instructor.
It's funny, though, because he's actually in really good shape. I mean, he really is in good shape, which leads me to believe that he was...
He knew, Joe.
He knew about this the whole time. Knew.
This was no surprise. The Yankees know, too. The Yankees would not throw $2.5 million at Andy Pettit unless they've been watching him. They've been seeing him work out. The Yankees, who are trying to save money and get under that luxury tax threshold by 2014, would not throw $2.5 million at a guy who hasn't pitched in over a year unless they were damn sure and confident he could come back. And like Joe said at the outset here, he chimed in, you cannot ever have too much pitching.
Can't.
Ever.
Can't.
And having Andy Pettit sitting there waiting in the wings...
This is
pretty good problem to have.
This is a great problem for all Yankee fans. Yankee fans problem. Should be very excited and happy today.
The other thing I don't like about it is Phil Hughes. Where does Phil Hughes fit into all this? Now, he's going to have, you have to think, if he gets that, he will get the fifth starter job out of spring training. He will. Is he on a short leash? If he starts pitching badly at the outset of the season, do they throw him into the bullpen? Do they throw him down to the minors? Because if they do that, and bringing in a 39-year-old and Andy Pettit, who I know everybody's in love with, Phil Hughes is bye-bye. That's it. You want to put him in a bullpen, what's he going to be? He could be, you know, D-Rob's fine. Hughes is not going to be the eighth inning guy.
Soriano's there.
And he's the eighth inning guy.
Right.
Or the seventh inning guy.
Yeah.
So where does that... What, Hughes is going to be a mop-up guy? That your potential number one starter 3 years ago, he was being bandied about as a future number one, is now a mop-up guy in the bullpen? You're going to do that to his psyche? I don't think so. I think this guy asks for a trade, and I think he's out of here. He's from California, and I could see him going elsewhere to play baseball.
It's funny because they still have Freddy Garcia on the roster,
and
too.
And him, too. And
a lot of questions that need to be answered before they come back, before they actually travel to, Tampa. That's right. That's where they're starting the season. So, there's a lot of questions to be answered. But, again, as we're bringing up all of these, what's going to happen, what if, what's going to happen with Phil Hughes, what's going to happen with, I think all that stuff is going to be, everything is just going to wind up happening the way it happens. It's going to be ironed out. And Yankee fans, again, you can't have enough pitching. Andy Pettitte comes back. This is a guy you're going to trust. And we're going to see what he's got. He's going to start the year in the minors. And, the last time we saw him, he was 11-3 with a 3.25 ERA.
And listen, don't think for a second that this is a minor league deal.
No.
Okay. $2.5 million. He'll be in the Bronx.
Of course he will.
He'll be in the Bronx. He's not going to be half the year down in Scranton.
No. It's going to be,
even though
they're going to give him.
He could challenge Kagawa's minor league win record if he did stay down there.
They're going to give him as much time as they need to give him. That's. If he feels comfortable after four weeks, five weeks.
To rush him.
Right.
And
that's the beauty of having all this pitching.
Freddy Garcia, he got hit in the hand. That's insurance for Freddy Garcia. If something happens to Phil Hughes, Andy steps right in. He's your fifth starter. I
also don't want to hear about this. And I know a writer wrote it, and other people are now saying, well, he's got options. Michael Pineda is not starting the year in the minors.
Oh, good.
It is not happening. There is zero chance of that.
Andy Pettitte goes from not pitching to your number two? Is that what people are thinking?
I mean, someone before the Pettitte signing said that because Pineda has options down in the minors, that he's going to start down in the minors. To me, you're not trading Jesus Montero, your best prospect, for Michael Pineda to start him in the minors. This guy was an all-star last year. An all-star. He's got all the potential in the world. His velocity, he just hasn't pushed it yet. It was 92, okay. But you know what? He's working on his changeup, which looked damn good. And his slider looked damn good.
One person to say velocity, and then you get all the seagulls to say velocity. And then it's all over Twitter, and then it's all over ESPN, and then it's all over the fans. Oh, he's not throwing 95. By the way, he did throw one that was 95. So you don't think you can't just hit the gun at 95 and it's not there. It's there. He's working on things.
That's it. This isn't a Phil Hughes situation where he was hitting 89 on the gun last year.
Everybody calls me doom and gloom around here, okay? They do. And for good reason, especially during Giant season. But look on Twitter every once in a while. And I try to bring everybody back.
The other one that I saw the other day was a tweet to Sweeney. Raul Labanis is having a terrible camp. Can we cut him? And is Damon still available for us to sign? What is... And Sweeney just goes, it's March 15th.
Joey, you and I, because we were the only ones there, no one else was standing outside the clubhouse for 4 hours waiting for players in spring training. The only two people, well, three with Kevin Sullivan, but the only three people that could have saw what was going on in the bowels of that stadium were me, you, Kevin,
Woody, the security guard, yeah.
Both security guards.
Yeah.
Who worked harder than Raul Labanez while we were down there?
Guy.
What did we see? He would go out on field two for his morning BP session at 10:45. He would go through all that.
I said he's a cage rat. He's a cage rat.
Comes in from field two, goes in, maybe eats something really quick, brushes himself off, throws some water down his gullet and some Gatorade. The cages underneath the stadium.
He's
in there, not for 10 minutes,
no,
not for 20.
He probably took
hours.
He probably took, I would say, an hour of, regular, batting cage, hitting batting cage balls. Then he hit about 1,500 balls off the tee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, This guy was a cage rat working on it.
Listen, it's really easy for you to sit there in your mother's basement, getting on Twitter, in your underwear, oh, can we still get rid of Ibanez? You don't see what we see. Okay? This guy worked tirelessly. And like Sweeney said, it's March 15th.
When this guy has 23 home runs at the end of the year, then you can talk to me.
You know, that's the one thing that really, and you could, whatever, it really gets to me. I'll clean it up.
It CYAs you, if you can spell it out.
It really frosts my bottom that in a 162-game season, and you'll see it, in the first series, if the Yankees get shut out in the first game, and they might, whether it's Big Game James or David Price. Shields looked like he was in midseason form when he faced the Yankees a week ago. So if the Yankees get shut out in that first game, say it's like 2-0, 3-0, you people are going to go insane. There's 161 games left. It's a long season. Please keep telling yourself, repeat after me, repitan ustedes. I'll do it in both languages so everyone understands. Slow your roll. It's a long season. One loss, 10 losses, 15 losses in April doesn't mean it's doomsday. This team has proved time and time again. And Joey, it's a broken record. The walls of my office probably want to put a muzzle on me because they're sick and tired of hearing me say it, but you have to. Tranquilo. They will be fine. And with the addition of Pettit, it makes them even better.
Yes.
It does. I hate it because of, the kids that we cover, it probably kills them.
But for an organizational move, it's terrific.
The organizational move, as Joe just said.
It's terrific.
They had to do it.
It's terrific.
If they have the information, Little Birdie told me back in December this was going to happen, but I kept it quiet, like I was asked. So I kind of knew. But it's going to be interesting, to say the least. Is he going to get another press conference? You're going to roll out the red carpet again.
Pull out the 5 championship trophies.
Here's what we should do. We should invite, to the first game he pitches at Yankee Stadium, we should invite Jennifer Capriati, Brett Favre. Who am I missing?
Mario Lemieux.
Mario Lemieux.
Roger Clemens.
Roger Clemens.
Oh, that's not going to happen.
Nope.
Jimmy Connors.
Jimmy Connors. They should all go to the mound and throw out the first pitch.
Arnold Palmer.
I think that's a great idea. I think it's a great idea. They'll steal it.
Jim Palmer.
Jim. Gordie Howe, who played in 6 decades. God bless him.
Played for the Whale. But I hope everybody enjoyed our spring training coverage. We really tried to do a good job. We got over 30 interviews. We tried to cover the team wall to wall the time that we were there.
We worked tirelessly. I mean, we do it all for you. We sit out there outside that clubhouse for 5 hours to track somebody down after their workouts, and we do it for you. And we appreciate the clicks. Trust me, we do. But know this when we say it. We do the work. We do the legwork. We try to get everybody because we know how baseball-starved the fans are, because if I was sitting at home, I'd want to see this stuff too. So if it wasn't for you guys clicking on it, we wouldn't be doing it every year. So
absolutely.
Thank you. So thank you.
And on that note, I think that's a good way to end it.
All right.
What do you think, Chris? I mean, it's your show. I'm not going to...
What is this? It's my show.
It's our show. And by the way, a big congratulations to Chris Sheeran. For the Off the Wall show being nominated for a Cablefax Best of the Web Award, Best Podcast. And this isn't just a local award. This is nothing to poo-poo at, Chris. This is a national award, so congratulations.
Thank you. Listen, I wouldn't be here in this position if it wasn't for you, if it wasn't for Kevin Sullivan. You guys came up to me. You guys are the ones. And excuse us for a second because we're going to have a little love fest.
A little could, waxing poetic.
Yeah,
here.
You could end it now if you want. But I'm gonna tell Joe and tell Kevin and Michael Spirito, everybody who's on the .com side, how much they mean to me and how much they've meant to the growth of my career. Because, you know, I feel like I'm a hell of a lot more comfortable in what I do, say, on Yankees batting practice today or the Nets pre- and post-game show. And it's because the YesNetwork.com people saw the talent in me and had enough confidence to give me this podcast and let me have this weekly venting point, which, you know, it really gives me a little bit of a release that I really need, because I listen to stuff all week and I have my opinions. I'm not one to call into to shows and voice my opinion, because most of them I'd get in trouble for. But I like having the opportunity to do it here, and I know people listen. I know people download it at iTunes. That's, you know, that tickles me. It really does, that people are actually subscribing to this and they're listening to Joe and I. And the other people I have to thank besides Kevin, Michael, and Joe are, you know, the regulars that come on here and make this podcast what it is, really. I mean, I'll call a spade a spade. Kevin Kernan has been absolutely incredible. Al Ianazone, whenever we need him, when something happens in the NBA, he's here.
Seth Everett,
the brilliant guys from MLBTradeRumors.com. When stuff's going on.
Tim Derkus.
Yeah.
Those guys are great.
Yeah. The Giants guys.
Big Blue Interactive. Eric Kennedy. And many, many more. I mean, we've had writers.
Yeah,
and
it's not just us.
Yeah.
It's the content that goes into it. And, you know, Joe and I have fun when it's just me and him. But when we have a guest on, we really want to get the very best out of that guest and have fun with him at the same time. And we hope we bring that to you on a weekly basis here with the Off the Wall podcast. And it just means, you know, I've been nominated for Emmys before. I've won Emmys before. But I think in my 10 years here at Yes, started in February 2002. So it's been exactly 10 years for me already. And we're coming up on the Mike Francesa, well, the Mike and the Mad Dog show anniversary, which is the 19th.
Which is my 10-year anniversary here, by the way, March 19th.
That was the first time we were ever on the air here. So as I'm coming up on that 10-year anniversary, I have to say that this award that we're just nominated for is probably the most special nomination in my 10 years here at Yes. It really means a lot because we really put our heart and souls into this, and the guests that come on are just tremendous. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you for making this what it is. And it wouldn't be here, it wouldn't still be here, if it wasn't for the people who listen to it, the people who subscribe to it, and the people who come on and give us their analysis. Like I said, from the bottom of my heart, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And the people that know me the best will know that is not BS. That is something that you can take to the bank. When you're my friend for life. So thank you. And we'll see you next week here on the Off the Wall podcast. You can tune back in now because the love fest is over. I want to thank, basically, one more thank you. I want to thank E-Dubs for subscribing to the podcast, by the way. Yes, that's big news. He texted me, said he was waiting for the next one. So, Eric, here it is. Eric Roldan of the Yes Network. This one's for you. See you next week, everybody.
The Off the Wall podcast comes to you each week on iTunes and YesNetwork.com. If you like what you're listening to, simply subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you have an extra minute, leave a comment and rating.